Welcome to TalentWise, the definitive podcast for CXOs, human resource and learning and development leaders. This show comes to you from thought leaders who talk about human capital development in today's organization. How to engage and empower today's employee to be effective, competitive and relevant. Stay with us for an exciting conversation with our guest and learn how to future-proof your team. I'm your host Shubhanjan, founder of KnowledgeBridge. Our guest today is Bhavani Singh Shekhawat, CEO, UK Europe of the Akshay Patra Foundation, the world's largest and perhaps the most celebrated school meals program, currently serving over 1.6 million children every day.
Of course, I think more and more employees are looking at a portfolio of work in their lives. And increasingly, they're also looking for that portfolio on a daily basis. So it's not over a period of time that for the first 20 years of my life, I'll do this. For the next 20 years of my life, I'll do this. And for the next X number of years, no. It's not how they chunk their portfolio. People are looking for increasingly diverse and fulfilling experiences on a daily basis. People are finding more than one way of fulfilling their lives. So they might want to make money in three different ways in a day. They might want to work at a workplace, then they might want to blog for money, and they might want to be a part of a band at a pub singing a few songs, but they don't want to do it just for the joy of singing. They also want to make money doing that. So people are having portfolio careers. They're trying to do more than one thing because they want different kinds of pleasures and outcomes in their lives, which in totality make them feel a lot better about their lives than leading a unidimensional life. And in so doing, they also want to believe that they are doing something meaningful.
Bhavani Singh Shekhawat is the CEO, UK Europe, of the Akshay Patra Foundation, the world's largest school meals program, which has served over 2 billion meals to children to date. As a leader of this organization in Europe, he leads strategy, innovation, and initiatives for Akshay Patra. Prior to this, Bhavani had a career in the corporate world, leading large multinational teams in organizations like Nielsen, Reckitt-Benckiser, and Coca-Cola in multiple geographies. Bhavani is passionate about people, growth via innovation, and enjoys leadership and implicit challenges. He regularly speaks at company meets and industry events and is listed with the London Bureau of Speakers on customer centricity, insight, innovation, and leadership. He serves as adjunct faculty for postgraduate leadership programs in business schools and also serves as a member of the advisory board and non-executive director for multiple entities. Now, on to this great episode of TalentWise with Bhavani Singh Shekhawat. Bhavani, welcome to TalentWise. I'm so happy to have you on the show. We have been trying to get you for a while. And we're really excited to hear about your views on the social side of the spectrum. But before we get there, let's start with the employment landscape. What do you think is working and what is not in terms of closing the loop between education and employment?
Well, first of all, thank you, Shubhanjan, for inviting me to this podcast. I think it's a brilliant set of agenda items, topics that you are bringing to bear. So I'm really pleased and honored to be here. To sort of begin the conversation and to answer your question a bit more specifically, I think, you know, to say that change is the only constant and the world is changing at warp speed is a given. I mean, they are beyond cliches now. But clearly, the overall landscape is of a nature where we must pay a far more attention to what we put into that landscape than what we have been doing of late. So clearly, there are gaps like never before. And equally, there are opportunities like never before. If you look at particularly the skills landscape, and if you were to look at whether you look at India or around the world, the challenges remain the same. The context might change, but the reality is quite similar. The gravity and the contours might change a little bit. For example, in India, we've put this tremendous effort into creating a whole generation of people who are at the very best exam ready. So if you were to look at the continuum of being exam ready to being job ready to being life ready at the most important level, we are barely exam ready. However, what we are doing about it is quite pathetic. And to me, that is the more perplexing part. The fact that we've got a very, very large number of high school students who want to go to university, and very large number of them are getting grades that should be impossible. The fact that if someone scores 100 on 100 in English in grade 12, it suggests to me that there is no scope for improvement. And that is completely wrong. They are struggling, because they are finding increasing situations where someone has spent years and years studying math and sciences and perhaps a little bit of economics, and then ends up doing 4 years of engineering, does a little bit of work for a couple of years only to qualify for an MBA exam, does an MBA, and then that this person needs to be trained all over again. And that's a monumental waste of time on everybody's part. So the employer is struggling. In many cases, the employee is struggling. And I'll give you one example of this, that on the one hand, we say that in India, a very large number of women are entering the workforce. So yes, we have a very large number of our young girls doing exceptionally well in exams, and a very large number of them going on to acquire higher education and the skills that perhaps come along. But you also see a very large number of them dropping out at the first instance. In other words, we have a very large number of women dropping out in their early 40s at the first instance of either they want to spend more time with the family, or even earlier in their early 30s when they want to raise a family, or it could be a husband's transfer. It could be anything. And the reason for that is that It takes them about 10 years to realize that what they're doing is not only asynchronous, is completely out of sync with who they want to be and how they want to live their lives, but it's got absolutely very little relevance to what they studied. So our challenges are really, really severe. They are manifold. They are multidimensional. And I think it wouldn't be far off the mark to say that if we do not address it soon, our demographic dividend could be creating a demographic liability.
Do you see this a very India-specific issue, or do you see some kind of manifestation happening elsewhere in the world as well?
I think it's a global issue. Like I said, the degree might be different. In England, for instance, we've had a lot of discussion around exams being diluted. So a larger and larger number of children getting A stars and A's in their high school diplomas, and a larger and larger number of students then applying to university, and a larger and larger number of employers saying these people just don't have the requisite skills to be able to do a good job on day one at their workplaces. However, in places like the United Kingdom, and to a certain extent in most countries in Europe and perhaps the US as well, there is still a lot more focus and premium on not just soft skills, but vocational skills. So you can still earn a university degree via vocational training, and the employers don't necessarily differentiate or distinguish. In fact, if you've had hands-on work experience, you'd be far more valued than if you just had a degree. So the challenges are the same all over the world. The degree to which the challenge is manifesting on a day-to-day basis in this interface between the employee and the employer and the larger ecosystem might vary a little bit. In India, I think we are reaching almost a crisis situation for two reasons. One is clearly we have a very large number of students graduating from high school, and we have a large number of employees saying, I necessarily do not have the bandwidth, monetary or otherwise, to retrain someone who on the face of it should have the skills.
It is a very tempting scenario to get into that discussion as to what's failing in the education system. But we'll refrain from that and stay focused on
on our topic at hand, and I would like to know that with the extremely varied experiences that you have had in the corporate world globally, do you see the challenges changing? Did you see any significant shift there?
I think there are a few very, very dramatic shifts. One of the shifts I've alluded to just a while ago, and that was that a few years ago, employers would place a premium on their ability to train and nurture talent. Today, they do not have that bandwidth. They are finding it even more difficult than yesterday to be able to allocate time and resources to reskill a person. The second thing is more and more businesses are now not being differentiated on what they do, but they are being differentiated on how and why they do it. So attitude becomes really, really important. And employers are now finding the not just the rationale and the reason, but almost an urgency to hire for attitude and then train for skill, because they cannot do both. They cannot reskill as well as instill attitude that is conducive to their environment.
It is also because the environment has shifted dramatically, right? 20 years back, you were still sort of in a continuum of the industrial era. But over the last 20 years, things have shifted, things have morphed in ways that none of the managers or the leaderships were exposed to.
Exactly. And three things are happening. One is we have shorter and shorter business cycles. So like we have shorter and shorter news cycles, we have shorter and shorter business cycles. So companies, organizations, businesses have to be constantly on the guard because they could become obsolete tomorrow. That's one. Secondly, we have a tremendous sort of awareness amongst the workforce of the opportunities that are available or that might be available to them. So loyalty from an employee's point of view isn't what it used to be. And the third thing is, for both the employee and the employer, the needs are far more dynamic, or the manner in which those needs are becoming apparent on a daily basis is far more dynamic. So if you joined an organization or if you hired a person for a particular reason, if that reason doesn't stay relevant alongside the need for the other person to fulfill that role or that responsibility is not as relevant, things quite change dramatically. So we are living in a very, very interesting time where business cycles are getting shorter, the needs and dynamics of the workplace are changing, and the needs and dynamics of the individual are changing in a world where they have far more information of the world around them at a speed and in a magnitude that wasn't possible just a few months ago. And therefore, with these three forces at play, we are facing a very, very interesting conundrum of the skills and the attitude that is required in the workplace. So there's a far bigger premium on attitude today than on skill. But what truly, truly is also important and becoming far more distinctly sort of clear is the need for the right attitude at workplace.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will explore the challenges for the social sector, which according to Bhavani, are much larger, and how resources are increasingly finding other outlets, making it a double-edged sword.
You are listening to a Show How To audio original. Podcasting is one of the fastest growing content marketing avenues today. We can help you exploit this largely untapped marketing opportunity. We can craft your audio strategy and leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that smartphone penetration provides. It is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to target audiences.
Welcome back. Before the break, Bhavani touched upon the challenges that are multiplying for the social sector and how dwindling access to resources are compounding the problem. Let's listen in to Bhavani as he expands on the issue.
How do you see this whole thing playing out in the social sector?
So I think the social sector has got its other challenges, where talent is at a huge premium. And our problems are continuing to get bigger and bigger and bigger. So we have in the social sector far bigger problems to solve than yesterday, and have access to far fewer resources than yesterday, because the resource that we try to access has got far more opportunities outside of the social sector. So having said that, we are now also beginning to see a generation of young people who are hugely attracted to the social sector because, like I said, their attitude is about making a difference. And somewhere down the road, they might realize that, look, maybe they have the skills, maybe they don't have the skills, but they do not really want to spend all their time coding in front of a computer. They truly want to solve a problem, and they want to get hands-on in solving that problem. So in the social sector, the problem is as severe, perhaps even more, because just the nature of the sector is such.
So there is this discussion we have been having, and one of the thoughts that came out is that as we look at increasingly people working independently, sort of the manifestation of the gig economy, if you please, employees are going to move from challenge to challenge. So, which means they will also sort of seamlessly move between the social and the corporate sector. Do you see that happening?
Of course. I think more and more employees are looking at a portfolio of work in their lives. And increasingly, they're also looking for that portfolio on a daily basis. So it's not over a period of time that for the first 20 years of my life, I'll do this. For the next 20 years of my life, I'll do this. And for the next X number of years, no. It's not how they chunk their portfolio. People are looking for increasingly diverse and fulfilling experiences on a daily basis. For example, we do see in England where certain organizations are allocating up to 20% of an employee's hours towards doing what they choose to please. So if an employee says, I want to spend a fifth of my time really helping an NGO or a charity do better, employees are encouraging that. So it's no longer, it's not just gigs. I think it's a portfolio of experiences that people are now demanding and craving in their daily lives.
Yeah, right. So when I refer to the gig economy, it's also the one of the manifestations of the gig economy is that people are not necessarily working only for money, which means they're not trying to sort of climb the corporate ladder, but they're actually trying to do things that are more fulfilling, and thereby working on specific projects which give money for a certain amount of time and doing things that they like to do for the rest of the time. So that was really the part I was referring to.
But I think it's a bit of both. I think it's not just either or. I don't think it's either making money or having a fulfilling life. People are finding more than one way of fulfilling their lives. So they might want to make money in three different ways in a day. They might want to work at a workplace. Then they might want to blog for money. And they might want to be a part of a band at a pub singing a few songs. But they don't want to do it just for the joy of singing.
Right.
They also want to make money doing that. So the proportionality of input and output might vary, but people are having portfolio careers. They're trying to do more than one thing because they want different kinds of pleasures and outcomes in their lives, which in totality make them feel a lot better about their lives than leading a unidimensional life. And in so doing, they also want to believe that they are doing something meaningful.
This is such an interesting word you used, portfolio careers. That's an interesting one. We have to latch on to that at some other point. So that brings me back to the challenges of future-proofing your team. So if you straddle both the corporate and the social world, what do you think should be the focus for organizations to ensure that their teams are actually ready for the future?
I think organizations have to do a lot more, both with systems, people, and processes. They definitely need to have a far more systemic overhaul of how to hire. It's been said before that you must hire for attitude and train for skill, but employees have to now find smarter ways of hiring for attitude. and I think this problem is far more severe in India, where to do a job, you have to demonstrate the experience of having done that job before. And in the West, we are beginning to find a lot more sort of contrarian evidence to this, that when you bring people from a completely diverse set of industries and put them into a very different industry, the whole industry benefits and the person benefits too. I think we need to do a lot more of that in India. When you do that, you're clearly hiring for attitude, not necessarily domain knowledge.
Absolutely.
Or that skill. The second thing is they need to do a lot more with people. I think empathy needs to come back into the workplace. Hierarchy needs to be remodified in the workplace. So a challenge to hierarchy is not just having open plan offices and trying to separate out physical proximities from hierarchical distances. I think empathy is a lot more than that. Empathy is the ability to actually have a person-to-person conversation. Empathy is the ability to have a dialogue, to foster dialogues between two people where you're not talking to a position, you're talking to a person, and one needs to separate the two out. So organizations need to invest not just in that skill with their HR teams and their L&D teams. I think we need to invest that skill in every single person. And if the educational system is not doing that, it then becomes incumbent on the organization to really put a premium to the skills of empathy. Otherwise, we continue to have problems of gender issues. In India, we also have issues of which institute have you come from and all of the other badges. We need to find ways of decimating that. So that's the people side of things. And then clearly the process side of things. You know, what sort of behaviors are being rewarded? We still remain with the dregs of a system where performance was being rewarded and performance was largely being equated to having done what you promised to do. And if you need to make new promises because the world and the dynamics of the world you're in is changing at warp speed, how do you truly recognize and reward not just performance, but also failures? So I think we are struggling with some of the truisms, you know, that encourage failure, etc. But how do you reward failure? How do you reward someone who's decimated hierarchy? How do you reward constructive criticism? How do you put all of that into the daily life of an organization? And that's really, really a composite challenge that smarter organizations are at least acknowledging, and some smarter ones are even embracing. But a large number of organizations around the world, and perhaps even more so in India, are just deferring. And my submission to everyone is you can defer these important questions, but you can never deny them. Soon they'll come back to bite you.
I was reading this book by Hans Rosling, Factfulness, and he was talking of how our perceptions, which we all believe to be true, are shaped by where we grew up and the schools we went to, and the teachers who taught us things they learned 30 years previous to us going to college or school, right? So essentially, we are carrying knowledge which is like 40 years old and we believe them to be true. Why I mention this is because one of the things that come to my mind as you are explaining this whole conundrum is that one of the most critical things is to retrain our leadership because they are seeped in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And unless they are tuned into the future, there is no way they can manage the millennials who are sort of tuned just by the virtue of being born in this time and era.
Right, right. And I would really start by reorienting them, because unless and until you reorient them, you cannot really train them. You know, you train a dog, you train animals, but for them to do what you think they should be doing.
Correct.
I think we need to reorient the leadership to a world where they need help. And we need to reorient them in a way which tells them that if your rewards and remunerations are so linked to the performance of the team, how should you express that gratitude? And that gratitude is not just expressed in an annual AGM or through a leadership note. How do you express gratitude? Because if you begin to express gratitude, empathy will come about in an organization. So how do you reorient the leadership to first believe that they need to be grateful for the roles that they have been endowed with, but equally they need to find very, very authentic and very, very real and very, very meaningful, but most importantly, very, very everyday expressions of that gratitude. And then in so doing, take the organization to another level. I think you need evangelism. You know, you need evangelism back into leadership. And it doesn't surprise me that someone like Paul Polman, who led Unilever through this amazing transformation, actually wanted to be a priest or was a deep man of faith. I think you need to really bring back, I'm not saying leadership needs to go back to religion or any form of organized worship. I'm trying to say is the leadership needs to reorient themselves into not a world of power and privilege, but a world of gratitude and empathy.
TalentWise is brought to you by KnowledgeBridge. We produce customized and multilingual visual training content. We have worked on complex processes, products, and skills development for large blue chip brands such as Tata Motors, Mahindra First Choice, HomeLane, Epson, Toyota, Citibank, and Consul NeoWatt, serving diverse industries. Talk to us for your next custom content requirement and be pleasantly surprised. Call us on 99021-631-32.
What a wonderful note to bring this chat to a close. Bhavani, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time joining us from London. And I hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Shubhanjan. It's been a privilege and a real honor to be a part of this discussion. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us today on TalentWise. We hope we helped you focus on some actionable ideas today. It was certainly enlightening for us. We hope to see you again on our next episode. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts from, and give us a rating while you're at it. Thank you in advance. This Show How To Original podcast is produced for KnowledgeBridge, the multilingual visual training platform and custom training content creators by Show How To Audio. Hosted by Shubhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time.